G'day, folks. Talk to Geoffrey Morgan, proud Kamilaroi man from Walgett, and he's a consultant in the health sector where he runs his own lifestyle program. And we yarn about where it all started with him being a young fella on the streets of Redfern, where he was homeless, and learning from those hardships and the trajectory of that to where he is today running his program around the nation, doing solid work. Awesome. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. It supports the channel. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four walls right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs. Oh yeah!
Geoffrey Morgan, brother, thanks for coming up from Sydney. Much appreciated.
You're welcome, brother. It's a pleasure, absolute pleasure.
Thanks, mate. So, I want to kick it off with, where's your mob from?
Family's from Walgett. I'm a proud Kamilaroi man. Grew up in Redfern, good old Everly Street, Gadigal, of the Eora Nation. Eora Nation, I should say. And so I've sort of got more tie-ins, I'd say. I shouldn't say that in on a level of my mob is, and I'm proud of my mob from Walgett, mm-hmm. but definitely grew up in the concrete jungle of Sydney, and obviously we're really well-known within that community, so.
Yeah, yeah, I'm hearing you because, you know, I'm Kamilaroi Wanarua.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, 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 but just, you know, the land that you live on to and grow up with, grow up in, like this being Darkinjun land and
yep.
just what you do it immersed within, you know, the local culture, and that does mean a lot. And brother, with yourself, you're a bit of a bloody Koori Swiss Army knife. It seems like you've done a fair few things.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Great
yeah.
description.
Yeah,
I love
brother,
it.
Straight up.
Yeah.
But where the story began with yourself, so from what I've read in media and with yourself putting yourself out there, you know, and looking at what you do, you're doing today, which yeah. is marvellous, mate. It's awesome. But going back to where, from what I've heard and read, you as a 12-year-old boy being homeless in Redfern, brother, let's take us all the way back there, eh?
I think growing up the way I did, my father was very strict. And I think people from the area were a lot looser in a sense of I think my dad was trying to instill some great discipline by myself, which I now understand and has formed a huge part of my character as I got older. But at the time when I was a kid, I saw that as being restrictive, and seeing the other kids from Redfern Waterloo being out late at night, and I was in by 5 p.m. And if I wasn't, I was, you know, in some deep trouble, probably the best way of putting it. So I made a choice to jump out a first story window, actually, and jump out of that window and never look back. And for me, I think I thought it was a great choice at the time. And obviously it led down a path of destruction at that point in time in my life, because I had to then be self-sufficient and independent. And from that point onwards, my life changed and I never went back to my father's at all. At that point in time, thinking I'd done the right thing, looking back on it, once he started, he had brain tumour and passed away, we had big conversations around it because he felt that he had failed me. But what I learned over a period of time as a man, as I got older and became more mature, was the fact that he was only trying to instill some goodness into myself. So it was a great journey and a lot of hardship, but a lot of gratitude was built from those actions. Sleeping under bridges, as an example, during the night was scary, but also built a lot of gratitude behind myself and anything that I now live in, including, you know, having my own bed, just appreciating the little things, as Aboriginal people do, you know, the land, as one example, is just very precious to ourselves. And it taught me to really be appreciative of what we have. Versus what we don't, and focusing on what we don't. And I think society now lives in that world of what we don't have and what we want to obviously get to, but we forget to appreciate what we've actually got in our life at this current time.
Yeah, it's almost like a social disruption with what's going on, and just showing people really the necessities of what's important in life with COVID-19 and what that's done to the community within Australia and around the world. But
absolutely.
But going back into back to where you were, that's never an ideal situation for a young fella sleeping under bridges and being of that age and then going through unfortunate events with, you know, with your father and brain tumour and cancer and all that stuff. No good. But that seems like it's really carved out you as a person, yeah, and where that sort, and where do you rely back on that and how that sort of pushes you forward as an adult today?
Absolutely. You look at all the lessons that came out of that, the resilience, the strength, the determination, the independence. It's all of who I became. And even in the 12 years that I lived with my father and younger years, those formative years, I suppose, there was a lot of development and educational empowerment from him that I wish I'd stayed on for longer. But as I said, the immaturity at that time, didn't know what I was doing, and thinking that my friends were cool by being allowed out till 7 o'clock at night, I ran away for just that alone. And you look, I always look at what was the best outcomes of everything that you've ever been involved in, rather than looking at the negative side of things, where a lot of people say, oh, you know, that experience and a relationship is a great sort of way to look at things. People always look at, in a breakup, how bad that breakup was and what the end process was around the reason why they broke up, rather than saying, hey, what was the value that I learned in the journey together with that person? Because at some point in time, you love that person. And it was only maybe, let's say it was cheating as an example, the one thing that actually broke you up. But on the back or flip side of that, there must have been a lot of value for you to be in that relationship. And I always say the same. And I look back to my father, and as much as I thought it was a bad thing that he was holding me back from going out and being a kid, I always look back at what value he brought into my life, and mate, I'm forever grateful. So that's a little thing, a tool that I pass on to a lot of, you know, my online clients. Look at the value of a situation, no matter how dire that may have been for yourself. What was the lesson that you learned that you can apply for the rest of your life to be the best of your life? And it changes people's mentality and ultimately creates a better reality for the person. So,
yeah, big time, because it looks like you know, you utilise a lot of self-reflection and try and dig deep and look within what's inside, and, you know, where you can see all those little negatives and where you can utilise that and try and turn it around and, you know, try and make yourself a better person in no matter what facet of life, hey?
You think about anything, if say it was a football game and you kick the ball and it goes out on the floor and you know that your team's, you know, deep in the trenches now because of your action, if you focus on that and it's the first 5 minutes of the game and that's your focus for the rest of the game, then the only outcome will be that you'll play at a level that you know isn't your best. And I think by just looking at it and say, hey, what was the lesson I learned from that kick? Maybe I won't kick it as hard next time, as an example. And the same thing, apply that same lesson but in life and how that's relative to what it is in your life that you're actually trying to learn, and you'll be able to say, hey, I'm not going to kick that ball so hard in my life, and and it might be a relationship, business idea or whatever it may be that you choose to do in your life, and ultimately apply that principle or lesson that you've learned there. It's life-changing. But a lot of people don't get something you've spoken about. I get into the real depths of my emotions and what's happened in life, and I look at what lesson I actually learned from that experience, whether that it's perceived as a negative, as I said, you know, a relationship breakup, but looking back at the value rather than the negative, because it will only drag you down. We all wear this invisible backpack, and in the invisible backpack of life, it's the experiences, the trauma and so forth that you carry. And as long as you keep putting stuff into that backpack, you get weighed down in this thing we call life. So for me, I'm about taking that out, unpacking it, what was the lesson I learned, and moving forward with more value and benefit towards the rest of your life. So change your mentality, create a better reality by looking at things in a different perspective. And too often, change your language to change your outcomes, another one I'm massive on, because we always look at, oh, you know, that person cheated on me. So you're looking at the bad or the negative side of something, and that'll only drag you down throughout life. I look at what they taught me, and I'm grateful for it. We all make mistakes. And we all learn from 100%. Those lessons. And if you're a better, if you want to be a better person, just learn from the lesson that it taught you and move forward and evolve as an individual.
So with your evolution, because it seems like a lot of what you do is centralized around health. So how does it impact you and what you do?
I think for me, I've got a passion to change people's lives. It grew from growing up in Everly Street, Redfern, seeing the health issues and on the back end of that, understanding why they came about. You know, I look back before that and it made me really, it helped my business as such and helped transition and help people, because it's easy to say, hey, they were taking drugs or alcohol and that's why they got buried early, because of their lifestyle choices. But what was the trauma, the stress that caused them to maybe be in that position to think that was normal? And that's where I – yeah, so – and what triggered them off at that position then to go away and, you know, try and deal with the pain in the way that they felt necessary or right. So for me, it was about empowering myself to provide value and the right information to the individual to allow them to see the value and benefit towards their life, and then wrapping it up around each individual on a different level. And that
I couldn't like to suit the individual, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I couldn't have got that if I didn't grow up in Redfern, I don't think, because that taught me a lot about, it's not just about the process of what's going on, the drugs and the alcohol, but what caused it, what were the triggers, what could I do to deal with it and create the best solution around the individual moving forward for the rest of their life. Because as long as I kept saying, hey, don't take drugs or alcohol, that was basic information. I needed to go into each individual and say, what was the trauma that caused you to get into the position you're currently in, and how could we change that? And having those questions, like, where's, you know, just sitting down through this process gave me a lot of information from each individual, and I found a lot of patterns of behavior. And those patterns, I then created a health and wellbeing program to change more the mindset of the individual, the negative habit and rituals that they were carrying, the self-limiting behaviors.
So this is like the lifestyle system that you've built and created, yeah?
Absolutely. So the lifestyle program was, I started out, I was a trainer, I've been a trainer for over 15 years now, became a nutritionist because I knew that the nutritionist side gave me a good tie-in.
Food's so important, brother.
Absolutely. Like food, everything you do, how you feel, function and look will be determined by what you put into your mouth. The illnesses and diseases that you put yourself in front of will be determined by the foods that you put into your mouth and the lifestyle choices that you make. So to be able to have that component and be educated in that area and apply it in my own life made me strong in that industry already. But to have the experience, the lived experience of growing up in Redfern, seeing the health issues, seeing the struggles, and then understanding that it wasn't just about saying, hey, eat right and, you know, you live well. It was more about, hey, why do you feel the way that you do and what are the triggers that make you do what you do? And then to create the solutions based around that as an individual in the Aboriginal community, I then went about applying that across Australia and now across the world. And to be able to deal with individuals, send them out this questionnaire that I know is based on a lot of patterns of behaviour, and then deal with that individual and help them see more happiness, more success and a better quality of life, that's life-changing for me, and that's my passion that I won't stop. You know.
So you're gathering a fair bit of data then there, yeah, if you're absolutely travelling around not just state, nation, but if you're even going overseas and absolutely applying some of this too.
You'll find that non-Indigenous or Indigenous people have very similar patterns around behaviours related to stress, trauma, hardship, heartache in their life. And by applying the same principles, but then obviously whether it's culturally appropriate to the Indigenous community versus non-Indigenous community and the setup around that and how we structure that has been life-changing, as I said. And I think the thing for me I noticed most was the happiness that people got out. Everyone deserves to be happy in life, and that's what our program's about, finding true happiness based around the individual. So for one individual, it might be driving a Lamborghini. The next one, it might be just going down to the beach and connecting with land, taking your shoes off and be able to connect back to land. So
it's multifaceted what you do. It's not just exercise and what you eat, you're covering the whole gamut when it goes to what's going on upstairs to, you know, the physical side of things as well, yeah?
And that's where, that's our point of difference, and that's where we pride ourselves on. And as I said, taking you back, I could not have done that if I didn't grow up where I grew up. I went back to Walgett.
And especially dealing, you know, when you're dealing with mob, like no matter where it is around the country, when you got intergenerational trauma, when it's got, you got the stolen generation, and depending where mob are living and what's going on. So it gets pretty tricky, you know?
It's, and if I just went in and said, eat healthy and you'll be better. Yeah, exactly, no. Right? Yeah, your head's shaking. Yeah. And I understand that. Imagine if I hadn't had that lived experience and I went in as a clinician and said, hey, out of the textbook, what I've learned is you need to eat better because you'll be better. It'd be like, hello, do you even understand there's 20 layers behind what my action is at this point of time, and here's my triggers. Do you even understand that? And if you don't understand that, people are going to shut off straight away. So for me to be able to sit with the individual and then change and rewire that, and like I have these moments. I went up to Walga and my mum's buried up at home, and to sit down in front of my mum, I realised both her brothers were in the background, my uncle. So I went behind and sort of, you know, just said a prayer and hope you're well, thinking of you both in the dream time. And for me, I looked at what age they passed away, and they were in their 30s and 40s. And I think
that's young.
Yeah.
Would have been hard for you as a young fella.
And that's what I seen this happening in our community growing up in Redfern. And I was like, you know, there has to be a better way to this. And I started to educate myself from a young age, even though I was technically homeless, but I became very independent from a young age, cooking, learning to survive, and being able to be adaptive to the environment. So having no food, walking in somebody's house and sort of being there at the right time / dinner, as an example, to make sure that I was offered some dinner so I had food going into the night, was an example. And that skill in itself was all these little things that really made me learn a lot of the steps that I could transition and change, because I knew that the same struggles and issues that I was having was the same things that would happen throughout community. Taking you back to the uncles, being that at young and passing away, I can't just go into a community and say, you need to eat better. What was the actions that caused my uncles to drink so much? There had to be a lot of trauma behind those actions. There had to be a lot of stress and pressure from society, external of the Aboriginal community or Indigenous community, that caused these behaviours. What was it? So looking at those social determinants to allow myself to build something that was not clinical, but more from a lived experience, and then on the back end.
And it's hard if you just don't know, like when it's got to do with education, like if you don't know what sugar's going to do to you, you just don't know. So, and then you got a lot of health problems coming
Absolutely.
Up. And then, you know, because I know it gets hard when, because I've gone through Central Australia and I've been in some communities out there, and they mobs out there recognise, you know, the dangers of sugar, and because diabetes, you know, right through the Aboriginal community, First Nations community, and just how sugar affects Aboriginal people.
Absolutely.
You know, but it's good that the recognition of that is starting to spread out, and especially if it's from mob talking to mob
Absolutely.
About it, you know, whether it's through English or translation through their local language, you know, it's important to get that across, just so education first, and then you can start tapping into triggers and all that sort of stuff too,
Absolutely. My grandmother taught me knowledge is power, and it was something that stuck with me forever. And the ability, passing on books to read, and it started out with Hans Christian Andersen books, Choose Your Own Adventure. And then I loved the fact of reading, and whether that was a great way to wire myself, I'm not sure, or relative. I look back on it and I think it maybe had an effect. So it meant that I was able to choose my path in the book. I don't know if you've ever read those books when you were a kid. So you'd start reading, and if you wanted to go through the woods, you'd go to page 26. If you wanted to go through the town, you'd go to page, continue reading at this point.
Because I remember reading like Goosebumps. That would say, it would give you an option. So if you want to, you know, if you want to take this door or go through this trap trap path or door, whatever, go to page X amount, and then it would have about four different bloody endings.
And that was a beauty. And I think reading then, my grandmother got me into reading, and then the knowledge and experience started to come from, for me as a young kid, I wanted to be have big biceps and big chest, and Arnie was around and whatever else. I think as a kid you just want to be sort of look strong or feel strong.
Especially when you're looking, if you're into sports as a youngster and you're seeing, like, if it's got to do with, say, footy, league, basketball,
absolutely,
and you're looking at the physicality of these athletes and you're like,
absolutely,
you know, I've got to start putting in the work.
We had Mal Meninga back then, and he was an absolute giant. So for me, I was a smaller kid and went about training quite a lot. Jeff Fennick was around. He was an inspiration as a kid, boxing-wise, or as an athlete, because he was the Australian champion. But then, you had Tony Mundine, same thing. And to see those athletes, and a lot of the Aboriginal, Steve Renoff when I was a younger kid, was massive.
Oh, Brisbane,
I actually went for Brisbane because of Steve Renoff, and for me, Wendell Saylor and so forth, Chalk, then there was Blacklock, all the boys, and I thought...
Are you a South fan or what?
Well, I grew up in the area. It's quite ironic. And then the Broncos came out and they had a whole heap of, you know, Alan Langer, Wally Lewis, and I just liked the style of football. I was more a player follower, I suppose, than I was a team follower.
I was the same too, because I still go for the Dragons today, but I started going for the Dragons as a young bloke when I'm seeing Mundine and Blacklock doing all these backflips and carrying on, and I'm like, I'm going for this team. I've stuck with them, mate.
And I think that's a great lesson. Like, say something so simple is a great lesson in life. Find your passion and you'll stick to it the whole time. And for me, like, as we got older, JT is an example, Jonathan Thurston, you know, such a great player. I used to like watching North Queensland games, even though I went for the Broncos as an example. And at the current, they've got no players that excite me. And I'd rather look at other players, you know, looking at Melbourne, Josh Adokar as an example.
He's watching a gun, man.
Yeah, just for that one chance for him to run up that sideline and do something freakish as an example, or James Roberts or whoever it may be, right? So I'm more a player
I am proud of, brother. Like looking at the percentage of First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders across Australia compared to the general population.
Yeah.
But when you say you're looking at league and other general sports, like, there's a lot of mob. So you know what I mean when we're looking at the 3% hovering around there, but kill it when it comes to sport, you know.
And we find our passion. Give us a ball, and you can tell me otherwise, but literally, even if someone's not fit and healthy, if we pull a ball out with a mob and we're having a kick around or playing touch, even those that aren't fit are putting on a sidestep, and it's just a very natural. I think it takes us back to, you know, our ancestors and the fact that we were very active in community. And, mate, we could climb a tree, and as a kid, I'd climb up to the top of the tree and it wouldn't be a problem. And people would look at me like, get down from that tree, and I'd be like, what are you talking about? This is just normal. And I think it just comes very instinctive to be very athletic in that sense. And if you can then apply the modern day sports athlete to the individual and the training behind that, the nutrition behind that, you look at Latrell Mitchell as an example, or someone that's really got some solid build out, James Roberts as an example, and the application to that, and how
George Rose.
Georgie's from Walgett, good old Walgett. But and I've tried to I'm pointing you out, Georgie. But in general, I'd love to get Georgie and deal with, like, have an interaction,
because he gets out to the mob and he does a lot of mentoring, does he, or what?
Yeah, so he, like, I think with their organisation and what they do with the brothers, I think they do a lot around health and wellbeing as well, and, you know, just in general trying to inspire community to better choices around anything that they choose to do in life. But little message for yourself, Georgie Rosie, if you ever see this podcast, I've hit you up 100 times. I'm going to hit you up 101, because I want to see our mob live as long and as strong as they possibly can, because – the passion behind what I do is I'm sick, and I mean this, and I'm about to run a big campaign on this. I'm sick of seeing
people. Put it out
people,
there, brother.
Yeah, I'm sick of
spread
seeing
the love.
And this is coming from here. This ain't coming from hate. This is coming from pure love. I'm sick of seeing us.
So hear that, George. Jeff's coming after you, brother.
And everybody else that's not living a healthy lifestyle in our community, because I'm sick of seeing us bury our family and mob way too early and way too soon. And taking you back to my uncle's 3941, I think they were, I'm pretty sure, on their headstones. To me, that scars my brain. And that... I know it's not just me that's going through that. I know every single, mob across Australia has been through what I've been through by losing somebody way too early because of the lifestyle choices we've made. I'm here to empower our community, our mob, as much as I can around health and well-being. And by all means, whether it's a community, an individual, whatever, reach out, because I'm passionate about seeing you living as long as you can with your family and mob, and just making better choices. Especially with now, social media is a double-edged sword. You've got the huge potential to share health and well-being information, training, nutrition, whatever else that may be. But on the flip side of that, you see a lot of the younger fellas posting up big nights out, and they're obviously partying all night and whatever else. And the campaign I want to run is not to post for a good month. Let's all hold back for 1 month and just whatever you want to call it, dry July almost, but not posting something of a negative action that not only inspires our community but stops external at the Aboriginal community being used as a meme or whatever it has been to then say, hey, look at these the Aboriginal people or Indigenous people and how they carry on, because I'm sick to death of seeing it. And I know that there's a lot of people doing great things, especially the younger generations coming through, but then we're labelled because of the actions of some of our mob. You've got to be careful with the information you're sharing.
That's it, and it's frustrating. And it's like, in our culture or any other culture lot, but it's like how you'll get, say, general Australia, they'll just focus on the small percentage of maybe what's happened with mob and the negatives that have gone on there, and then that just gets blanketed. Oh, absolutely. look at these black fellas, and it's not the case. And that does make me sick, because then you like walk, or in my case, wheel into a room, and if it's and they're already got these preconceived notions in absolutely the back of the head before they even open their mouth and talk to you.
Absolutely.
Being Aboriginal people,
and I know, let's say it was Shane Phillips from Redfern, who was a great inspiration and mentor to myself. Who are working damn hard for our community to really try and inspire the younger generations and all those within community to make better choices around anything that they're doing in life. And there's so many, I'm up here on the Central Coast, and there's a whole heap of organisations up here that have got great raps from other people that I've spoken to before I go and interact and try and work with them.
Oh, like Reconciliation Action Plans, you mean?
Just in general, it's the stuff they're doing, whether it's
around just what they're doing in general, Yeah,
it could be business, it could be health and well-being, it could be mental health and suicide prevention, just as a couple of examples. And I think what ends up happening, as you said, you get a small percentage, which I understand. Like, don't take me wrong when people see this. I understand that people are going to get together and enjoy life, and a balance of life is very important. Even as a health professional, get together with your mob, and if it's your birthday, have a great night. But to post it up and then post you dancing on a table, singing out with a whole heap of people and carrying on, what ends up happening, someone will grasp, especially with social media, be able to grab that, drop it on there and say, have a look at this. And all it's doing is giving them fuel. Non-Indigenous people fuel to then throw that on a fire and really light it up. And we're in a position now where the Black Lives Matter movement is really striving forward, and we're grabbing a lot of momentum. And those educated
and talk to me about that, brother. Like, with what's happened, because I feel strongly about it. Where it started with over in the States, and where that's just, and now it's flooded over to Australia here, and you're seeing mob everywhere in different capital cities around the country, just, boots on the ground, just marching the streets, because too many mob are dying that are incarcerated and in other means. And just talk us how you feel about that and what's been going on.
Well, growing up, well, I did. I made bad choices, and I was one of those kids growing up and making, you know, choices that weren't representing our community. Same thing I speak about now. But and I understand that a lot of the elders at that time were going through a lot of trauma. I understand now that we're in a better position where there's a lot of leaders and a lot of young kids coming through universities, as an example, as well as obviously lived experience from racism in the community and how they dealt with that, to be able to apply better practices moving forward. I think, unfortunately for George Floyd, being the person that set this off, as much as it set it off, it's also created massive awareness around how Aboriginal or how black people are treated in general in society. And I think for humanity, for me, I always say the best race on this planet is the human race, and how we treat one another with respect, dignity and love. So to be treated any other way, it starts to, whether it's a form of racism, whether it's, you know, the form of how as humans we treat one another through common respect. And once we throw the balance out, and the balance, I always say, whether it's around health and well-being, your business, how you treat other people, is like a pool. As soon as you lose chlorine out of the pool, it becomes toxic and green. And the same thing applies to the principle of anything in life, whether it's business, and you start to lose focus.
Yeah, and that balance is out.
It's out, and your pH level starts to balance out, and you turn green and it becomes toxic. And anything that's toxic in this life, we need to find a solution as a whole, not just looking at ourselves as a human race rather than saying, hey, black or white. No human deserves to be treated in a way that then disrupts their own happiness, taking you back to what I said at the start. Everyone deserves to live the happiest life they possibly can. And as soon as someone has an impact on that happiness for the individual, COVID being another example, how can we change it to bring back that happiness back to the individual, the community, the organisation, or whatever else it may be?
Because mental health's huge, brother, when it's got to do with COVID-19 and a lot of people being holed up. Because I've been talking to some Victorians here and there, and I was talking to one yesterday, and just a Victorian, and just, you know, the limitations of what they can and can't do for, like, an exercise is a big one, and it's hard to, you know, get exercise equipment, but, you know, you can utilise your actual environment for what you want to do also, but just, it's just tricky. Like, it's tricky down there, but everywhere, but, yeah, but just trying to keep the sanity levels on a certain balance scale. Absolutely. So they don't balance out, so.
I think COVID's thrown a lot of people out, and people always ask me, we had this conversation before this, it's how you're travelling during COVID. For me, there hasn't been any change because I have the mentality to find the best solution around the current situation that you're in. Now, if that meant that you climbed a mountain and you broke your leg, how are you going to get down the mountain? If you don't have any form of contact and you had to get down, you're going to have to crawl, full stop. That's your best solution.
You had to find a way. You don't want to die on the mountain.
And that's the best way of putting it. Exactly right. So what is the best solution in this current climate of COVID, Black Lives Matter, that has thrown a lot of stress, as I know, as an Aboriginal person, and the posts that I'm seeing and the amount of people that are taking a break from social media and because of the way humans treat other humans, full stop. So we take colour out of it. As an individual, are you impacting the other person's happiness? Yes, you are. Why is that so? How can we make that better for the future? And understand that it's not a black or white thing. It's a human race thing about respect and kindness to one another, and some love behind that action. And when we do that...
And a lot of people don't reflect on their actions and what they do, which frustrates me big time.
I think I used to get frustrated when I was younger. And I'm like, why don't they see our way in, and et cetera, et cetera. And I became very adaptive to how I could make sure I bridge the gap between those that didn't know or see the information, and then provided that to the person on a level that they understood the information. Mm. And at that point in time, it became a matter of whether you were ignorant. And obviously, was it the racism behind that ignorance that sat there? And at that point in time, if I realised that that individual wanted to be ignorant around that particular matter that we spoke about.
Ignorance is bliss, brother.
And I just let them go and say, you know, oh, I don't have time, and I've tried to educate you, and I try as much as I can put it in a way. I find that a lot of posts I do, let's say around Anzac Day as an example, or Australia Day, and show people why Aboriginal people get up, or Indigenous people get upset during that time frame. Invasion Day for Aboriginal people. And to be able to bridge that gap, because they're like, oh, we're not going to change Australia Day. But to be able to sit there and say, hey, here's why, and educate somebody, by the end of that conversation, most people go, oh, well, I've never looked at it like that, nor was I ever taught that in school. And I was like,
and it's only like, it's been a public holiday for since the 90s. It's like, just change it, get it sorted.
And
far out.
Taking you back to the pool situation, right? If anything causes you stress, dump it and fix it. Now, Australia Day for me, and here's how I explain it to people, is isn't it a day for all Australians to be inclusive of celebrating, being proud of being Australian, right? Whether you're non-Indigenous or Indigenous. How can it be that day if half, or not half, 3% of the population aren't happy about that day? Doesn't that tell you that that means that for Australia Day to be inclusive for 100% of Australians, it's not at a point where it creates so much discomfort on social media. Mm. If you have a look at non-Indigenous, even my friends don't understand, some of my friends don't understand it, and trying to empower them to get a better understanding, I say, well, if it's causing this much friction on social media, how can it be a good thing? And
it's
isn't
not
Australia
just a few people. This is across the whole First Nations across the continent. You know?
Absolutely. So you got that 3% of Australians and the population behind that, and the support from the people that actually understand that, on top of the 3% of Aboriginal people during this time frame. How can that then be inclusive to all Australians to be proud and happy on Australia Day? It's impossible. It's not happening. So doesn't that give you an answer straight away? And if that ignorance is there, no wonder Aboriginal people are frustrated with the government, because the government are in control of changing that day. It's like putting the flag up on Sydney Harbour Bridge, a simple gesture to show that we sit in support of one another and there's unity and love and respect for one another, but yet we don't have the flag there, we don't have Australia Day changing.
We just need to keep chipping away. That's all we've got to
do. Absolutely, and I think now with social media, the exposure.
That's a beauty. Like you said, it's a double-edged sword, but if you can utilise that, like even if you can't get out with COVID and whatever it may be, you can just blanket and broadcast vocally through social media, through whatever means, just to make that point, getting it across the line.
You look at the Indigenous round coming up in the AFL, and they can't use the Aboriginal flag as an example, but there's been a lot of media behind that of, make sure you bring your Aboriginal flags to the game.
Yes.
And that's coming from various sources that usually weren't as supportive, I suppose, of Aboriginal people. And I think we're at a point where the media is starting to play and have an impact on the decisions being made. And I think it's only a matter of time before Australia Day changes and we recognise it's Invasion Day and that's celebrated. And as Spot Aboriginal on, people, how good would it be to honestly share our culture with other Australians, to say, hey, our culture is also Australian culture, in the sense of, it's something that we should be proud of, not hide and push into the background. Which makes me really sad. You know, you've got so many hundreds of years of culture, yet we push it behind a closed door. And we're pushing it behind a closed door and saying that's not our culture as Australian culture. And I'm like, well, that is.
And that's what's frustrating, when you've got thousands of years
and
then with a short period of just, you know, over 200 of what's happened.
It's
like you got to recognise and throw that ignorance out the door and really embrace the culture, like the Aboriginality and what culture is here now in Australia.
Absolutely.
As everybody that's living on this continent, because we're a melting pot culturally, like all the different cultures.
Crazy.
Here. Let's, you know, just move ahead and be progressive with this.
A little tip for everybody. Take away the frustration. And the best way to do that is empower people with the right education. And whether that's having some links that you can pass on to the individual to have a look at and read around true facts of the history of Australia, to allow that person to then have the information in front of themselves to make a sound choice. And if that person at that point chooses to be ignorant, my advice to yourself is let them go, and at the right time they'll change for the right purpose. Sometimes it won't ever happen, sometimes it will, but if we focus so much on that one individual, I always say if you split two things up, you got 50-50 here, and if 50% of it is towards frustration around not creating change, you'll take away from the 100% potential you have for the individual that actually wants the information that can create a positive change.
Spot on, because I was just about to say that you can only put in so much into an individual, but if you're not getting anywhere, it's like, move on. Someone else is going to be receptive to Absolutely. What we're trying to put across here.
Go back to the pool situation, and if it just stays toxic continuously, how often would you want to swim in that pool? You're not going to want to jump into a green pool. So the best way to move on is remove yourself from the situation. And as I said, if you've provided that information, I just don't waste my time and energy on people who waste my time and energy, full stop. It's a thing that it's massive, something that I live by, and I'm massive on it. If that takes me 5 minutes to work out, I'm happy to move on, pass on that information. And if that person still wants to be ignorant, I'll come back and provide more information at a different time, maybe when it's settled down a bit, because I know their frustration or tension's high because they're you got to understand, people set their ID or their ego is set from how they grow up, their values, morals and beliefs from the people they value. And whether that's an education from school or people that they know, their parents, their uncles, their brothers, sisters, that's then carried for the rest of their life. So when you challenge that and say, hey, here's what really happened to Australian history, people are going to put up a roadblock straight away because all they know is this set value or behavior or belief.
Yep.
And once you challenge that, you hit a brick wall. Mm. And to break that down, which we're currently in with the Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, and they've got to be able to substantiate it, like of all different avenues. Don't just – and then when you question that and you know, with the best if they don't have the right information.
And that's, you just hit the nail on the head. Make sure you have the right information to provide at the right time. So if someone says, and if you don't know where it is, do yourself a favor, contact an organization that can provide you with that, the right information to pass on through a link that that person could read, even if you highlight sections of that and then put the link down the base of that, to allow that person to go, oh, wow, I didn't know that happened. In the Australian National Museum at the moment, it was quite funny, went for a walk the other day.
Right.
And we got there, and because of COVID, walking around down at Canberra, we got to the actual museum, and they said, mate, everything's shut other than the Captain Cook exhibition. And myself and another brother were there, and we looked at each other and had a bit of a laugh. And they're like, oh, is something funny? I'm like, nah, don't worry. I go, let's wander in.
Don't you think they would have picked up on that?
And we jumped into the exhibition.
That's a joke.
And I have to say, if anyone, depending on when they see this podcast, in general, it was one of the best exhibitions I've ever seen. And I was like you, I raised my eyebrows when she said Captain Cook exhibition, but it was done from the land councils from the areas that they landed, Botany Bay and La Perouse.
Yeah, right.
And what they'd done is they'd got the excerpts of, you know, Captain Phillip, Captain Cook, and what they'd written in their journals. So no one can contest that Aboriginal people, they were there. They were waiting for them on shore with their spears saying, hey, don't land here. And when they did, one of them was shot because they challenged in the leg and so forth. And the education behind that is all in their journals. That is common knowledge. You can access this from the National Library or wherever it may be, right? So to be able to provide that information to someone who says, you weren't here first, or whatever it may be that frustrates you as an Aboriginal person, my advice to yourself is slow it down to speed it up is a great little term I use for myself.
Mm.
Go away, step away from the conversation, grab those links, provide it to the individual, and provide it in a calm environment to allow a peaceful meeting to occur. Solutions are never found over anger. That's probably the best way of
putting it. No, they're not, mate, because anger overrides and it just pulls out negative stuff. That's not going to get you anywhere.
It's just going to drag you down. And if you can provide that information to the individual and it's sound information, even from the Australian government, that they can look at and then educate themselves and make a sound decision that's relative to the information that's behind it, and you still want to be ignorant about it, then that's on you. Move on. It's like a relationship. If that person's making you toxic or to pull toxic, move on to the next component of your life, because life's too short to spend it in a toxic environment, full stop.
That's it. Move on, brother. But so how does it go with yourself and what you promote and with your lifestyle program, and how does it differ for when you're saying you're looking at the city landscape of Redfern, and I'm talking about Aboriginal community,
yep,
and then going out, if it's back home, out Walgett to Alice Springs to Cairns, or if you're going out the Kimberley or somewhere else. So when you're looking at the different First Nations cultures around the country, so how is that just different for yourself? Like, how's your experience been?
I think for me as an individual, learning that the opportunities in the country versus the city, totally different. And to be able to understand that, and I was one of those kids, especially being a 12-year-old kid out on the streets, that I became very adaptive to the environment. So it meant going out, listening to the elders, listening to the community as to the opportunities there and what we could do for ourselves in that sense. And that's where I take it away from saying, don't worry about everything external. What can you do for yourself to be in the happiest position, the most successful position that will improve your quality of life? And those three things form the pillar of the lifestyle program, or the pillars of the program. And how can we as an individual be better around that? Because one person might want to just paint, as an example, on their front porch and sell paintings. Someone might want to start a business in the local community or online, as an example. So it's totally different perspectives to an individual who goes to work in an organisation but wants to create or be a part of something great towards changing the Aboriginal community. To understand that, you had to be adaptive. And over time, I'm constantly learning. And the more I immerse myself into different communities, both rural or metro, gives me the opportunity to learn as much as I can. And that's, I think, knowing our communities and knowing the exchange of information has allowed us to evolve as a culture. Even when, back in the day, trading between those that were at sea and those that were in land more, as an example. And to use the same analogy, but obviously in a more modernised, evolved way, especially with, obviously technology involved as well, I'm able to get out into communities via Zoom, Skype, or whatever it may be, and have that conversation, but understand them on a level. There's no point in me saying, hey, you need to get down by the ocean every day because it will clear your head if it's 8 hours inland, just as a pretty basic example.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And then on a real in-depth level, say, hey, go and get some work in Walgett versus go and get some work in the city. Two totally different levels and the opportunities.
Right.
So what can we do to create the best
environment
for you?
And that's a big thing too, opportunity.
Absolutely.
Depending what it is.
I always say, what's your passion? What do you love doing? Do you like kicking a football? Why not start up a schools program here that keeps the kids active after school, as an example, right?
Yeah.
So, and that was just off the cusp. And the idea of that is to really find what you're passionate about. Is it painting? Why not holding a painting class here every single afternoon? And it's same
and create
thing.
Traction.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Wealth creation doesn't have to be about money. It's about passing on culture. And, for me to learn off my uncle.
Cultural wealth.
Oh, or even language as an example. Every time I go up home or I talk to different people from home, I'm saying, teach me this. How do I say that? What about this? And to the point where now we have, mob in my hometown, as an example, creating a dictionary that we can all access and we know that we can access.
That's great.
And that's been put into, let's say, as an example, into a Facebook group for our people, as an example. So it doesn't have to be a money money thing. It's about how much wealth creation you can create that makes the person more knowledgeable, happier. The quality of life improves because your connection to culture has elevated. For me as a kid, I thought being connected to culture was being in Everly Street and being around Aboriginal people.
Yeah. But
for me, I lost a lot of my own language. I didn't even learn it as a kid, and that was lost upon myself. The connection to my own hometown was 8 hours away. So a lot of culture was lost. And I'm constantly going back. I went back to a leadership camp recently with young kids.
What, out home?
At home, and they taught us the Dreamtime stories from the area. I'd never known them properly. Mm. Morgan Wells is another example where they actually created a well that's been there for generations upon generations, and it was on top of Narran Lakes that looked across the lake, and they'd tell them, go across here, go across there, while they hunt. And for me, that is value and knowledge that we should be sharing more often. And whether that's on a cultural level or a business level and everything in between, relationships and so forth, let's share with one another as much as we possibly can so we all grow, thrive and strive moving into the future.
Yeah. So you still get out there a bit here and there at home, Walgett, yeah?
It's 8 hours out of Sydney, so it's not just around the corner, but I get out in general. I try not to get out just for funerals. So every long weekend, as an example, I try and get out there and spend some time with family. Mum's buried up there, so for me it's very important to drop by. Dad's in the Blue Mountains, so coming out of Sydney, I'm able to see Dad.
Oh, you go that way.
Yeah, and then I'll go up to Walgett, spend time with the family and Mum, pay my respects, and get up there usually long weekends. But that's something that's I've tried to pass on to other people. Let's stop just going to our hometowns if you're living out of town.
Just for sorry business.
Or to knock out or whatever it may be. Let's get together as mob. And I've been very proactive in 2020 around contacting family in Sydney and say, hey, what are you doing? Let's catch up and have a coffee. Let's go and go for a walk, or let's go and do something. Good. And I think in an age of so much chance to connect, we have so much disconnect. Thumbs up, you do a post on social media.
Yeah, I've seen them on social media. I don't have to go catch up and have a yarn or a coffee.
That's what happens. It's like, thumbs up or love you or something of that nature. And we know that the love's there, but why not, mate? You're 2 minutes around the corner, literally. Why not catch up together, go for a walk, be active, live a healthier lifestyle, and have a good yarn and have a good laugh. Nothing better, right, when you catch up with mob and you're laughing up.
100%.
I caught up the other day and we sat there for 3 hours having a good yarn, and I think that gets lost on us. And in this time of so much stress,
it's just storytelling, life telling, and then that's just more lived experience and just more knowledge and, just tapping in and like getting that balance right, but just what you can feed off each other, whether it's family and friends and, or just that getting out, not being behind the screen and, 100%. Mentally what that does for a person, brother. The physical aspect too. If it's walking along the lake and having a yarn with each other,
How do you feel after it, right? You feel relaxed. Even you just thinking about it brought about that little sigh. And I think for me, I was in a service station the other day, and I went to pay, and this is a great example of what we've just spoken about, but on a different level. So I walk into the service station, I go to pay, and usually it's like, tap, thanks, mate, have a great day. That's the conversation. As I walked to the counter, there was no one in the store, and the bloke said, how's your day been? And it changed my whole vibe, because I walked up to that counter, and I was like, we're robots, I'm going to tap. Petrol pump number one, bang, tap, and I walk out. See you, have a great day, you too, mate. And that was the general wiring in your brain, right?
That's it, because that's a person on the other side of that counter.
100%. And think about that interaction, right, for yourself. That's what happens at a service station, unless you're in a country town and you know the bloke, you might say hello in a different way.
But it
might even go around the same little pattern. Hey, John, how are you? Good, thanks. All right, bye. See you later. This bloke asked me, how's your day? Has it been busy? Oh, yeah, what happened? And we had a little conversation in the interaction, and as I walked out that door, I went, actually just made me feel really good. And I think for mob going through Black Lives Matter, going through COVID and the stress that's been put on ourselves, especially those down in Melbourne at the moment, ask the question, catch up, go for a walk down by the water. It's nice and calming. Connect to land. Have a little yarn. Exchange some information / knowledge. What my cousin shared the other day, female wise, was the struggle she'd been through and how she dealt with it. And right. Guess what I do? I grab something, even if it's just one thing, and I put it into my repertoire to build upon or help somebody else who might go through a hard time in the future. And we don't realize that little interaction of one, catching up with family and the happiness. And
means a lot, and people don't realize how much those little interactions mean.
So please, here's a little challenge for yourself. Instead of just putting a little thumbs up or a love heart or love your cuz or something on social media, hit them up and catch up with them the next day, especially if it's been over a month. I think we should catch up with our family and friends more often than not. And too much these days we're just using an emoji as a way of catching up.
Yeah, 100%. But
you can put a big emoji across my head at this point in time. In the podcast.
Oh, God. So it's solid what you're doing, brother, throughout the nation. But are the nation recognising? So I'm talking about when you got state and territory governments to do with health.
Yeah.
Are they taking on board some of the programs and stuff you're doing out there or what?
Absolutely. So we work with Ministry of Health, New South Wales Health is one example, and we've just started a National Health and Wellbeing Project for Aboriginal people. And my vision for the future is not to see Redfern repeated, and I mean that in a nice way. We had a great community, and to this day, everybody knows everybody, and it's the same with any Aboriginal community. I think that's massive about our culture. You think about an Australian block, and let's say it was Redfern, the block, three streets wide, one lane actually, and you got two streets and one lane, but I could walk around two streets away and walk into any house and literally sit down and have a yarn, and no one would say, hey, what are you doing in my house? It was like, hey, what are you doing, cuz? And we'd have a conversation, want to feed or something of that nature. If you were to do that here in Sydney, people are like, oh, I'm calling the police, who are you? And I think that we can take away and learn from. But I think in general, I want to be able to change the health aspects that have happened in the Redfern community and be able to use that model to then create change for the future. And that can be applied to, as you spoke about, rural or metro, and make sure that it's sustainable for the community. And the best way of doing that is having conversations and listening as much as I can.
That's the point, listening.
Absolutely.
Like a lot of people don't active listen and really take that in, you know?
If you – I can go and learn from a textbook how to be a nutritionist, as I have. But if I don't apply that and I don't listen to, hey, I can't afford the foods that you can't afford. As an example, I did an eating on a budget series. Mm. Why? Because I listened and I understood that some people just couldn't afford this level of shopping and food for their family. So how could I make that work for the individual in the rural setting that doesn't have as much work as the city? And to be able to then structure the program where it worked in that format, where it was more sustainable for each environment, was something that I prided myself on. And that came from me listening to them, not what I felt or learnt from that textbook and said, you need to eat this particular food, otherwise you won't change your life, nor will you find happiness. And that person's like, hey, that cost, let's say it was $100 worth of shopping, but they weren't able to spend that much and spend $60 a week on shopping. They were going to, I was setting them up to fail. So how could I structure that program to the rural community versus the the city slickers as such, and make it work? And that's, I think that's for me been the most important thing. And that adaption came from running away as a 12-year-old kid and adapting to whatever environment was presented to myself. And I go out to the community and see that they can't afford that. Well, how can I structure it to make sure that they're getting the best option in the situation they're currently in? Instead of buying a Coke can, buy water, just as one example.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's still affordable and it will change, obviously, the impact it has on your health / mental health and the length of your life and, more importantly, the quality of life.
Mm.
So that is how I've sort of brought about the change that I'm proud of.
That's great. So jumping into adaption, because you're involved in sports, brother, and I'm thinking, NRL, but then netball as well. So run us through that path, brother. What's going on there, NRL, netball? Tell us how you're involved in that.
Well, for me, I think it was more same thing, just the adaption and making sure that if you want to perform at any level, and I deal with a lot of elite athletes as well, or teams, or environments, organisations, what does that look like for each of those individuals to make sure you're getting the strength out of that person, what they're passionate about versus the next person? If you get a person who's a plumber, just as an example, and say, I need you to do the woodwork for our organisation.
Ain't happening.
You're going to have a problem. Yeah. If you say, hey, this person's really good at plumbing, let's use their strength and they'll become the plumber for this organisation. Obviously, you could be talking about being the CEO, marketing or whatever it may be. Then you're getting the strengths out of each individual. And for me, I think organisations have seen the value behind the strengths that I've created with the people that I've worked with, or the organisations / communities. And over time, I really have a vision to be able to one day have been into every Aboriginal community across Australia and make a positive impact based around them as an individual. And when I say them, our mob as a community and what they stand for and what their values are, rather than saying, hey, you need to eat good food and that's it. Really being able to listen and then apply what would be relative and sustainable to that region. Do they fish by the river? Do they fish by the ocean? And putting that into play. And for me, it doesn't matter whether it's talking at a netball, high performance. That was the, if you've seen the netball component of social media.
Yeah, so what's going on there with the netball?
That was with the high performance, the New South Wales high performance team, and all the Aboriginal people that had made the team, and telling them the struggles that I went through as a kid. And the same thing applies and is applicable to them going through trying to make the Australian team as an example on
the
journey. Well,
that's good. So you sort of like, because just now I'm thinking of it, because when you got netball, obviously it's women
absolutely
majorly playing that sport, and then when you got NRL, you got league. So you're tapping into both genders there, yeah.
And taking you back, we just had a chat about it before, there was particular patterns around success. And if you're applying yourself, you know, you always hear the ticking the boxes as such, but for me, if you're applying yourself to the principles of success that and you're creating good habits and rituals, which is what we do with the community, our program's called the Habit and Rituals Workshops. And the reason why, I know if you've...
Habits and rituals.
Yeah, so if you've got ingrained habits and rituals based around your values, morals and beliefs, for me as a young kid, my habits and rituals were around negative behaviours and choices because that's what I saw and that's what my education was during my formative years. So my behaviours matched exactly what I learned. To see something different, you have to see something that you've never seen before, and someone's got to come out and be able to show you that. And that's why I've gone out into the netball environment as an example versus a corporate organisation versus the Aboriginal communities versus a schools project, and be able to be that chameleon as such and adapt to the individuals, but use the one habit and ritual of how are you performing behind what are your habits and rituals, what do they look like, do you get up when the alarm goes off or do you hit snooze, how do we change that behaviour so you get off a different exit of the roundabout. Instead of getting off down negative lane, you're getting off that positive street. So for me, that's priceless. And to see that change occur, especially for young people coming through for future generations with our mob, I can't tell you, I go to bed at night very happy knowing that even if I change one life, that one person will hopefully spread out just like COVID, in a sense, and have a positive impact in our community. And I think that for me allows me to sleep really well at night.
Okay, so you're talking about one life. Oh. But if you could blanket it, and I'm talking about we've closed the gap,
yep.
right, for First Nations people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders across the continent, if you had all the money and all the people power to get certain facets of close the gap actually
working,
or you'd say close to closing,
yeah.
what would you, obviously it's, you're very health on orientated, yep. which is awesome, but if you had that blanket opportunity, what would you do?
I had this conversation this morning driving up here to the Central Coast, and it's very interesting for me. I think there's so many great people doing great things in our community, and it's like a puzzle. You get all those pieces and you throw it into a box. It's not a beautiful picture until you plug them all in together. And until, this is my belief, that we all link in and there's a process, and whether there's a one body that oversees that process as to the steps of the process,
mm-hmm.
going back, changing their habits and rituals may be the first thing. Into mental health and well-being, maybe someone like Joe Williams, just as an example, right? Into, and there's many other organisations, so please don't ever, those out there, I love what you do and I'm just making an example, but having those steps in place, and say there was 20 different components, facets to closing the gap, we can't move forward on this one component. So if you do something with myself as an organisation, community or an individual, you cannot move on to the next component until you have truly tapped into changing those ingrained habits and rituals as an example, because that self-limiting behaviour, every time you hit that brick wall and understanding, going back to what we were talking about before, the Black Lives Matter movement, being able to slow yourself down to speed yourself up and provide the right information and education to the person to affect positive change has to occur within yourself. And if we can do that and say, hey, all right, where are we at? Where are you at? What baggage are you carrying? And when I say baggage, what trauma, what stress, what heartache, what self-limiting beliefs are you carrying that we can change? And a massive example for men in our community, and I'm one of those, I've made mistakes over time that and I'll take you to another component after this, but I've made mistakes in time that I'm not proud of in my community that I've learned from and grown, but I've taken ownership. And instead of carrying that in my backpack and saying, hey, that's me, and I've made a bad choice to stuff it, I'm going to keep going now and just keep making those bad choices because my community sees me as that person, that would be one massive component, just as an example, that we'd have to change, because a lot of men do. They carry it and they go, I'm that person, so what I'm going to do now, I'm just going to continue. And let's say it was domestic violence as an example. They do it once and they go, oh, everyone knows I'll do it anyway, so stuff it, I'll do it again. And I'll do it again. And that then gets passed on to the next generation. You know, if their kids see it, oh, it's just normal behaviours, put a stop in it, take some ownership and say, from this point, what I'm going to do.
Absolute ownership.
Yeah, and it takes a lot. And that's how we create growth. We say, hey, I'm accountable to my actions. I learn a lesson. And I always say, don't say you made a mistake. We all learn lessons in life. So make your lesson, change your language to change your outcome, make your mistake a lesson. What did you learn and how can I be better in the future? Rather than carry it, say you do it at 16 years of age and then you're at 30 and you're still carrying that from years and years ago, plus all the other trauma that goes in between, how much success do you feel that you're going to have in your life? You won't have much because your invisible backpack will be so heavy that you can't deal with anything else. You're dealing with all these other things over here. Just take it out and say, hey, I own it. Here's where I learned the lesson and here's how I'm going to be better from this point onwards. And in time, you'll build community trust to say, hey, you know, that's who he was, but he changed and he's better for it. And I think when you put that as one example, into mental health, into suicide prevention, maybe even educating yourself or me how to deal with or help somebody going through that hard time, so that we become these super, I was going to say supermodel, super empowered people that can pass on this knowledge and experience to the next person so that they don't commit suicide, they don't carry that for the rest of their life. They are able to see things in a different light.
Having a collective of mentors as such.
Beautiful. And that knowledge is passed on because, as you know, for our community, knowledge being passed on allowed, let's say, my people out in Walgett to identify bushes that we could eat off versus those that would use it, be used to help us during colds or...
Talking about that, do you... Because I've seen some bits and pieces of your food that... Are you a bit of a chef or what? Hey? And do you infuse native products?
Well, that's a great question. I do when I can get my hands on it. It's when I go at home, it's very hard. You can collect some stuff, but obviously the amount of that lasts for isn't as long as I like it to be. But in general, and this is a big shout out to anybody, if anyone wants to send me any of their products, and I love helping one another and helping your attitude will always determine your altitude. So for me, I'm all about helping one another. And if you send me your product, I'm more than happy to post it on my social media. And if that gets you more sales from that, I'm all for that. Because I want to see you live the best life around your passion. And if your passion is bush foods, let's bring it to the forefront and allow you to get as much exposure as possible. Send me out some food, some of your products. I'm more than happy to put them out on camera every time I cook up with the actual product and tag you in the post. And if that helps somebody on a different level, by all means. I love cooking. I learned to cook from a young age. I had to a very young age. By all means, hopefully that... Me sharing that allows other people to, you know, obviously do something that they never could do before. Cooking from the heart, good for your heart.
Solid, brother.
Yeah.
Inspiration.
I love it.
Who's yours?
I think I've spoken about this quite a lot. I think Shane Phillips as a kid, seeing our community as destructive as it was viewed from the outside, the choices that we were making as a community, the judgment, you know, the interactions with police and so forth and the riots and everything else at that time, and for Shane to take some massive action around creating and being a part of CDEP within the community, coming around, collecting the rubbish, painting the building so there wasn't any graffiti on there. I recognised that from a very young age, that he was doing something really positive for the community. Then Redfern All Blacks and driving that, and had massive success at the knockout through that whole period. And I think...
With the Koori knockout.
Yeah, with the Koori knockout. So I think for me, all those values that I seen him doing, I was sponging up. And as much as he didn't realise at the time, we've had this conversation, him and I, he was a great inspiration to myself. My Uncle Bob Morgan, absolutely champion of the community, very well respected and holds himself really well. And the way he presents things has taught me how to present things, as I've spoken about in this podcast, so that it's not through anger and it's not... Anger's not going to resolve anything. We're just going to butt heads and it'll push us further apart rather than draw us closer. So he taught me the value of being calm and showing the sound information behind what you're actually passing on. And that allows people then to make a sound choice moving into a brighter future. And those that don't, as I said, just move on and let that toxic pool sit by itself in its own greenery. So... those two people, Tony Mundine, massive as a kid, to be able to not drink alcohol and be against drug use and everything else that was going on in not only Redfern but across communities, you know, across Australia as far as I knew, and everywhere I went, I think for him to stand up and say, hey, no, this is, we can still be happy and we can still be proud Aboriginal people or Indigenous people, Torres Strait Islander, by making sound choices around saying no to drugs, saying no to alcohol, you don't need to drink it. Mm. And there is a way of just catching up with your mob and having a good yarn and having a good laugh.
100%.
Over a cup of tea. So he taught me the value of it didn't take drugs or alcohol or stimulants.
Yeah, socialise and have a yarn, eh?
Yeah, and you'd look back at it, you know, the paintings that go down and people drop down, a lot of the times the meeting places that people have drawn, there's no alcoholic drinks there. There was no drugs there. It was just us sitting down together as a mob and sharing yarns and knowledge that created that wealth creation I've spoken about, that you could take away and feel really empowered as an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and yep. be proud of. For me, as an example, I drive past the High Court of Australia every single day on my way home, and I always yeah, and hopefully this will be some inspiration to other people. I always think back to what our ancestors have been through, but how Marvo would have walked out of that court, a man way out of his depths of where he lived and down in cold Canberra, and the happiness he would have felt and the tears, no doubt, that he would have probably shed walking out of that court, knowing the judgment just went in the favour of all our people across Australia. And I think
the Mabo decision.
Yeah, so, and every time I drive past, he walked out of here and he would have been so proud of his journey. And that had nothing to do with money in a sense, but more so the land. And if we start to focus on what we already have rather than what we don't have, especially in this generation now, I want to get these clothes, I want to get this car or whatever it may be, just focus on what we already have and appreciate that and live in gratitude, and I promise you your life will change there.
Beautiful, mate. Social media, got a few pics here. Want you to explain them, righto?
I look forward to it.
Okay.
Love that pic. Absolutely love
it. Just going to spin around.
No, that's all right. I can see it.
Hold on.
Love your determination. Love it.
There we go. That's why. It's on orientation lock. Bang. Okay.
Absolutely.
You can explain this picture, brother.
Mate, we went to see Jackie Wilson. That was during Ninja Warrior, actually. And we decided to paint up on his sideline to show that. Yeah, I think Jack did that anyway with his painting up himself while he ran Ninja Warrior. His parents, Scotty Prince, I think.
Scotty Prince.
Yeah, it was Scotty. And his two brothers, his brother and his cousin. And we painted it up just to show that we want to connect our culture. And taking you back, Aboriginal culture is Australian culture, and whether they want to own it or not, whether we want to own it as Australians, I should say, not they, we want to own that as Australians, that was a great chance and opportunity to show how proud we are to be Aboriginal people in a country that has, you know, here we are on a TV show at the highest athletic performance possible, yeah, other than the Olympics and so forth. Obviously, people really striving to be all that they can be, yet we're taking it back to that ground level. And I think for us, it was a very proud moment and something that, and obviously supporting Jack in the process.
Are you having a crack at that, Ninja Warrior, or what?
The first few years, I applied every year, got on the show, did the trials and injured myself before the show, playing sport. And then last year I said, I'm done. I'm not going to train for it. And I think it was a great little example. If you find your passion and you love doing something so much, I started to train just around Ninja Warrior stuff. Ninja Warrior Gym opened up in Sydney and I'd go out there have some fun.
Ninja Warrior Gym.
Yeah, and I really was having a bunch of fun. I had no intention to do the show. I was like, mate, I'm just going to play sport and, you know, do some stuff. They reached out to me and said, hey, we'd love to have you on the show. Are you injured this year? I said, I'm not actually, but I haven't really thought about it. And I think I was trying not to jinx myself during football season in a sense. And by the end of the football season, I said, hey, mate, I'm ready to go and I feel good. And I hadn't, you know, first run where I wasn't injured. And I said, mate, and I've been training around that. Sent them the new video and I got an email back saying, hey, you didn't even make the trial. So apparently later on I found out that whoever dealt with just the email side of things wasn't the person I spoke to, had texted me personally, the show's director. So in the end, it ended up where it is. And I went, you know what, it just wasn't meant to be. And that's what I'm a firm believer in, people looking over me. I've had photos of me at health and wellbeing events where they've taken photos of the aura as an example, and they said, mate, your aura is incredible. I think for me, I've been able to take that on board and realise that people are looking over me and pushing me in the right direction is probably the best way of putting it. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't meant to be. And if it happens next year, it happens. I won't be training for it. I'll just be training for life. And
We'll see.
We'll see.
Right, I've got two more. Bit of bloody archery.
I love the photos. I love it. I love it.
Love that. Bit of archery.
Yeah.
Looks like in vineyards there.
Mate.
Yeah.
It was, we went to New Zealand for the World Cup representing the Indigenous Oztag team.
Yeah.
And
okay.
We actually won that tournament, and I ended up staying a week.
Oztag
tournament. Yeah, Oztag.
We stayed not on, an archery tournament.
We stayed on a week after, and that was, went across to an island, I'll think of the name, and we went across to the island. It was a beautiful island, and we pulled in, mate, I'm not much of a wine drinker or anything. We're like, let's see what all these vineyards. You only live once. Let's have a look at what people go to quite often, especially here what in the Hunter Valley.
Yeah,
and I said, let's have a look. And, mate, we ended up having a wine or two, and they had archery there. They had some other stuff there that we were playing. I think it was bocce. And some other stuff that you'd throw sort of, I don't know what it's called, with the rings, and you try and get it on the actual hook. And it ended up being a great afternoon. So
I love that pic, man.
Oh, it was a...
Looks solid, brother.
Mate, it was a great experience, and I'd say to anybody, I wouldn't recommend walking through the vineyards while I'm shooting a
don't go picking grapes while just got the compound bow out.
Oh, absolutely, mate. But it was a great experience, and if you ever haven't done archery before or even gone to a vineyard, look... As much as
I reckon it's a real soothing experience too, just shooting arrows. So
I think it's a real meditation type thing. You don't same thing, little experience in life that taught me a lot. It was more about not just pulling it back and letting it go as hard as I could, but really calming my breathing down to allow myself to hit where I wanted to hit. And I think in life, when you calm yourself down, let's say it was a Black Lives Matter movement as an example, and passing on the relevant information to empower the other people in general to make better choices in life around what's happening to Aboriginal people, then I've calmed myself down. I've delivered that information through that shot in the archery, and I've hit the target by providing that information and hopefully creating a positive effect and change ultimately.
Awesome. Last one. Look like you're deep in thought. Oh, that just blanked out on me.
I did see the picture.
Okay, you did see it?
Yeah.
All right, explain it for the listeners, mate. Saw it.
It was
you're deep in thought.
It was I'm massive on connection to culture and land, especially as I grow older. And what I used to appreciate as a kid, that was in Mykonos in Greece. For me, and we were on a quad bike, and I was with my partner at the time, and we'd ridden out. As a kid, I would have, at that point of time in the evening, probably been at a bar starting to get drunk. For me, over time, I realised that there was something became more valuable to me in life, and I think that's another important lesson to people. You always, everyone will be at a different point in their own life, and they'll go through this evolution based around where they want to sit, based on their own happiness. For me, we went to Mykonos, and it was more about seeing the sun go down, swimming in a beautiful crystal clear oceans, enjoying their culture as well, very much into their culture, the Greek people. And I think just sitting there, I reflected back on the hardships of my life, sleeping under a bridge, and to be sitting watching the sun go down on a quad bike. I was staying in a beautiful hotel, and I was just at the time obviously with my partner, and I was very grateful for everything that was happening at that point in time in my life. It's a very special photo to me, that photo, actually. It's quite ironic. I just posted it the other day again.
Yeah.
I've posted quite often. Very, what's the word, poignant time in my life to look back and reflect on how far I've come, and just to be able to sit there in another country going, wow, man, I used to sleep under bridges and here I am enjoying life and experiencing life. And same thing, you know, travel teaches you a lot about culture on a different level, and how proud they are as well about their own country and the foods that they have. And, you know, same thing, people know the Mediterranean diet. I'd love for our culture to be thrown out there by Australia and owned and say, hey, come across and see the Bungle Bungles, and come across and, you know, learn to do particular things, or watch people, our people dance song lines or whatever it is.
Eat based the native foods, you know.
How good would it be? And unfortunately, we don't have that. But that photo, yeah, very special photo. It's quite funny that you picked out some of those photos. They were very They were transformational points in my life, I think, those three photos that you actually picked out. So it's pretty crazy.
It's awesome. But, mate, love your work.
Yep.
Really appreciate that you come up here today, having this yarn, important stuff.
Yep.
Hit on a lot of great topics there. But, mate, just if people want to get hold of you, if it's got to do with the program that you're running, yep, your general social media, just any of that, throw it out there, brother. Throw it out in the atmosphere.
The easiest way is through the website, www.jeffreymorgan.com.au. And we do everything from schools programs, leadership programs, corporate health and wellbeing, community projects, health and wellbeing projects, which are the habits and rituals workshops. I travel across the country. In this time, I've become adaptive, and a lot of it's done virtually, but by all means, reach out. I'm passionate about changing people's lives, whether it's, as I said, as an individual or as a community, and it's more about me listening to yourself and then going away and creating the solutions based around where you're at, and making sure that that's sustainable. So reach out by all means. I love to have that conversation. A lot of conversations going on now all across the country, and we're going into a lot of communities at the moment, or organisations. So please don't hesitate to reach out. Love to hear from you.
Spot on, brother. Thanks for coming down.
Mate, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. You're an absolute champion, and keep doing what you're doing.
Love it. Cheers, brother.
Cheers.
See, he's putting in the work, doing the K's, grinding, getting around the nation, spreading his lifestyle program, helping the mob, helping the community, helping people in general. And you can see those positive vibes, you know, just how they rub off, you know. And what he's doing, you know, it's helping people upstairs mentally and physically. You know, it's good stuff that he's doing. Keep it up, brother. Putting in good work. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated, because it helps the channel. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at StreetRollingCheetah, or email one word, StreetRollingCheetah@gmail.com. Or we've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. I want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four walls right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto. See you on the next one.